Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome, free America. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview on a Wednesday morning in the sixth week of the Tyranny Response Network's existence and of this show. We're so glad you've joined us. If you'd like to join the show by participating on the telephone, asking questions, or perhaps making a comment, you can do so at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also send us your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. As always, make sure you go to policyofliberty.net and check out the things that are written there on the homepage about the show, including how you can donate to support the show, things like the Liberty Minutes program, as well as some deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio show, and a quiz to find out which of the four perspectives of Christian or theologically Christian public policy do you ascribe to. All those things are available to you on the web. We encourage you to go check out the homepage and read through some of the links that are there. Today we have an interesting show, an eclectic show, so many different things to discuss today, and we're glad you've joined us this morning. Just to start off, as we have with the recent shows, just a couple things from this Unusually Stupid Americans. You know, I brought this book into the studio, and ever since I've done that, anybody on the production staff just can't put the book down. During the show, while they don't have to press any buttons on their computers or lift any levers, they're over there. I noticed them over there reading the thing. And this morning, our homeschool producer Daniel was reading from page 10 of Unusually Stupid Americans. If the course is too hard, sue the school. Southern Methodist University's Advanced Education Center in Houston offered a Microsoft computer certification course. 12 students who took the course and failed this course sued the university, claiming that administrators had promised them it would be easy. Ooh. And then there's some other facts from stupid textbooks, it says, or what you learned in high school was very probably wrong. A recent high school textbook devoted only 6 lines to the illustrious father of our country, George Washington, in case you're wondering, but 6.5 pages to Marilyn Monroe, who of course needs no introduction. Another recent textbook has a math problem that begins with a sneaker commercial. Will is saving his allowance to buy a pair of Nike shoes that cost $68.25. If Will is making $3.25 a week, oh my. Folks, I'm just so glad in homeschool we don't have these kinds of textbooks. With people that are homeschooled actually know who George Washington is. They may not know about Nike shoes necessarily. They also might. They might know about both things, but certainly they don't have this sort of skewed perspective on things. Well, speaking of students this morning, I'd like to acknowledge a very special student, and he was written up in the Times Examiner. Hopefully he's listening on his drive to college this morning. It says on today's Times Examiner, this is the Greenville Conservative Voice of the Palmetto State, which is published here in Greenville, on page number 5 it says, Coben completes free medical clinic Eagle Scout project. Now, in case you're wondering, this Coben might be related to the Tyranny Response Unit, and you'd be correct if you assumed that. It says the task included funds and labor and management. Bob Dill, the editor, writes the column and says, Joshua S. Coben is a 16-year-old former homeschooler, sophomore at North Greenville College. That's right, 16 years old and is a sophomore, almost a junior. He is the son of Dr. and Mrs., it should be Dr., John Coben of Greer. Joshua chose his Eagle Scout leadership project, the cleanup of a basement of the Free Medical Clinic located at 600 Arlington Avenue in Greenville, South Carolina. The task included selling donuts to raise funds to purchase shelving, removing and disposing of old equipment and junk, as well as packing up dozens of expired medications for incineration and organizing 15 years' worth of old patient charts alphabetically. I believe there were 15,000 charts they had to sort through. Joshua organized and conducted for sale the sale of donuts and raised a total of $510 to purchase the needed shelving for medical charts. He recruited, organized, and supervised volunteers who spent a total of 8 days and 270 man hours on the project, including 60 hours of his own time. The clinic was grateful for the fundraising purchase, the new shelving units for the charts, but they're also most appreciative of the donation of time that you were willing to give, said Susie Foley, executive director of the clinic, in the letter to Coben. Foley described the project as a substantial undertaking. She added, "It's so refreshing to see such a dedicated attitude among young people regarding giving back to the community." And we just want to appreciate you this morning, Joshua. You're probably driving to school this morning and up early trying to go and conquer the tests of the day and so forth up there. Best wishes and God bless to you, and we just wanted to publicly applaud you for this great effort in finishing your Eagle Scout rank and doing this project. Now, I should mention one thing about the Free Medical Clinic. One reason we do love things like the Free Medical Clinic here on the Tyranny Response Unit is it is private welfare. That is, there are no government funds whatsoever extorted, coerced from people, and taken and given to this Free Medical Clinic to provide free medical care. Doctors simply donate their time. Pharmacists and dentists donate their time. Maybe it's only one day a month or every month or every two months. Drug companies send pharmaceuticals that are they consider excess to the clinic for free. People donate other capital goods that they need. There are very few paid staff members, and those people simply survive on the basis of donations. And they operate like Susie Foley does, the clinic, and manage it. This thing is a free market response to a need. Poor people who can't afford medical care can go to the Free Medical Clinic over on Arlington, on the corner of Arlington and Leach, just off of Pendleton in Greenville, South Carolina, and receive free medical care, a care from good, high-quality physicians in town that would normally be, you know, working in their offices, just donating one evening or one afternoon or whatever it is a month. And they have enough people donating time in the free market that they're able to open their doors frequently. In fact, I think it's every day that they're open now, Monday through Friday, and provide this this medical care for people. So it's a great project. It shows that in the free market we can provide for charity. We don't need Medicaid or Medicare or any government-funded programs to provide charity. And if indeed the tax burden were significantly lower, we would expect to see even more charitable institutions like the Free Medical Clinic. So we're so glad that it's available for people to use and that the market has come up and stepped up to the plate to provide such a great service to the community. And we also, again, applaud you, Joshua, for your good effort there, your good work there. If you'd like to send Joshua a congratulations, you can send a congratulations to joshua77@mail.com. That's joshua77@mail.com. I'd also like to make a plug for our friends at the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner newspaper can be picked up at 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville, South Carolina, 29609. Their phone number there is 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576. There's a rack out in front if you want to pick up today's issue that has the story about Joshua and many others we're going to actually be covering on the show today. 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville. If you want to give a call to either Bob Dill or to Laverl, ask them to set you up on a subscription so you weekly have this paper coming to your home. It's only $20 a year before April 1st. It'll be $25 a year after that. Out of state, it will be $22 and $27 a year after April the 1st. Again, the phone number, 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576. Be able to receive all sorts of wonderful libertarian and free market columnists. Just paging through today's issue, I noticed that they're being the whistleblower. They've got some extra copies of this issue going out just because they've disclosed who was actually funding the campaign of the Liberal City Council members and County Council members, excuse me, of the recent Greenville race. The Liberals are not happy about that. That's okay. We don't always have to make Liberals happy, folks, in order to be good people. There are also some other good articles in here. I was just reading and amused by Ben Graydon's piece today where he talks about basically mail-order brides and arranged marriages and why is this so bad? Why is dating so much better? And he makes a pitch for for going back to the old method, especially for those who are homeschoolers. Why not consider just go ahead and arranging a, well, he didn't come right out and say arranging a marriage, but, you know, let's consider other alternatives to dating. It's an amusing and I think a thought-provoking column. I encourage you to read that. We're going to talk more about these things in just a moment, where we've got a quick break coming up. You're listening, of course, to the Tyranny Response Network, and this is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be right back.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Just before we it gets away from me, I want to go ahead and read the Fifth Amendment. We've been reading the Bill of Rights just without much comment on each daily show, just to remind you that there is a Bill of Rights, that they what they do say, and because you probably, like many folks, have not recently read the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, or the Bill of Rights, important to remember these things, folks. That's why we're reading them here on the show and on the Tyranny Response Network, Christian Worldview. It's important for Christians to know what rights are available to them. Remember, the Apostle Paul appealed on the basis that he was a Roman, and he knew his rights under Roman law, and we also need to know what our political and civil rights are as Americans and as Christians. That's very important. The Fifth Amendment says, "No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." Of course, that's not always the case anymore, is it? We find that private property is frequently taken for public use, at least a portion of it, and people are not compensated, or there is some kind of scam running in the background. Recently, we had one of those with poor Billy Mitchell having his property ransacked by the local government hoodlums here in Greenville. What a sad commentary on the degeneracy of and the corrupt nature of politics in Greenville, South Carolina. But there is also the same thing happening elsewhere, not just in Greenville, and we realize it's a rampant and malignant thing in our nation today. Too bad for the Fifth Amendment. It's pretty much gone by the wayside. Many of these things, at any rate, some things still exist there, which are good. Not having to take testify against yourself and double jeopardy. These things seem to still be holding up, but unfortunately, a lot of it is gone away. P.J. O'Rourke says, "In all the trouble in the world, the lighter side of famine, pestilence, destruction, and death, a pleasant natural environment is a good, a luxury good, philosophical good, a moral goody good, a good time for all. Whatever, when we want it, or we want it. If we want something, we should pay for it, with our labor or our cash. We shouldn't beg it, steal it, sit around wishing for it, or euchre the government into taking it by force. Very true, PJ. We appreciate that comment. Always enjoy reading something from PJ O'Rourke every day, and it ties in pretty well to a column that my former mentor and a man I admire greatly named Walter Williams wrote in his column this week that comes up in the Times Examiner. It was actually, I think, showed up in other papers in the country around February 9th, but it's just a tremendous column that ties in very much with my column about that entitled Giving Aid to or Government Aid for Tsunami Victims Was Wrong, that appeared several weeks ago and has really received a lot of comments and accolades from readers and listeners to Liberty Minutes. At any rate, Walter says, charity to a man's fellow is praiseworthy, and Americans are the most generous people on earth. According to a quote by American philanthropist Daniel Rose in An Exceptional Nation, an article in Philanthropy magazine, November-December 2004, American private charitable contributions this year will exceed $200 billion, equal to about 10% of the total federal budget, that some 70% of U.S. households make charitable cash contributions, and that over half of all U.S. adults will volunteer an estimated 200 billion hours in charitable activities. Americans contribute 6 or 7 times more than some of our European neighbors. What about President Bush's $350 million commitment for earthquake and tsunami relief? Is it just as praiseworthy? Let's look at it. Charity is reaching into one's own pockets to assist his fellow man in need. Reaching into someone else's pockets to assist one's fellow man hardly qualifies as charity. When done privately, we deem it theft, and in the individual risks jail time. What would some of our ancestors say about government charity? James Madison, the father of our Constitution, said in a January 1794 speech in the House of Representatives, "The government of the United States is a definite government confined to specific objects. It is not like state governments whose powers are more general. Charity is no part of the legislative duty of the government." A few years later, Virginia Representative William Giles condemned a relief measure for fire victims, saying it was neither the purpose nor the right of Congress to attend to what generosity and humanity require, but to what the Constitution and their duty require. Unlike President Bush, a few of our former presidents understood that charity is not a government function. Franklin Pierce, our 14th president, vetoed a bill to help the mentally ill, saying, "I cannot find any authority in the Constitution for public charity," adding that to approve such spending would be contrary to the latter and spirit of the Constitution, subversive to the whole theory upon which these states is founded. And he continues on, talks about Grover Cleveland and Davy Crockett, as I mentioned in my column, and makes the point that, look, folks, you can't rob somebody else, steal their money, and give it to somebody under good intentions for a good cause and call it charity. It's still just theft. Appreciate the column, Walter. You're right on the money. As usual, rarely does the Tyranny Response Unit ever find anything that Walter Williams writes to be incorrect or missing the mark, and he certainly hit it right on the head today. Pick up a copy of this Times Examiner, folks. It's filled up with all sorts of interesting articles from various columnists today. And just down the page, we have the mentor of Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, and he has an article entitled Ending Slavery, also a very interesting article. He says, "To me, the most staggering thing about the long history of slavery, which encompassed the entire world and every race in it, is that nowhere before the 18th century was there any serious question raised about whether slavery was right or wrong. In the late 18th century, that question arose in Western civilization, but nowhere else. It seems so obvious today that, as Lincoln said, if slavery is not wrong, then nothing is wrong. But no country anywhere believed that 3 centuries ago. A very readable and remarkable new book has just been published, Bury the Chains by Adam Hochschild. Traces the history of the world's first anti-slavery movement, which began with a meeting of the 12 deeply religious men in London, 1787. The book recreates the very different world of that time in which slavery was so much taken for granted that people simply did not think about it one way or the other. Nor did the leading intellectuals, political leaders, or religious leaders in Britain or anywhere else in the world. The dozen men who formed the world's first anti-slavery movement saw their task as getting their fellow Englishmen to think about slavery and about the brutal facts about the moral implications of those facts.
Their conviction is that this would be enough to turn the British public and ultimately the British Empire against slavery. Might seem naive, except that this is precisely what happened. It did not happen quickly, and it did not happen without encountering bitter opposition. For the British were at the time the world's biggest slave traders, and this created wealthy and politically powerful special interests defending slavery. And I'll interject there. We've been reading on recent shows that there is much evidence that the Africans themselves enslaved each other. And it seems that when the British got there, they didn't have to go run after folks and round them up. They were simply easily purchased at the port by fellow black people selling other black people into slavery to the British. So they were just trading like a commodity of their own black brethren. Very sad. Sowell continues, the anti-slavery movement nevertheless persisted through decades of struggles and defeats in Parliament until eventually they secured a ban on the international slave trade and ultimately a ban on slavery itself throughout the British Empire. Yeah, but even more remarkable, Britain took it upon itself as a leading naval power of the world to police the ban on slave trading against other nations. And intercepting and boarding other country ships on the high seas in order to look for slaves. The British became and remained, for more than a century, the world's policemen when it came to stopping the slave trade. Burying the Chains carries this incredible story forward. Only at a time banning slavery to the British Empire, one can only hope that either Adam Hochschild or someone else writes an equally dramatic and compelling book on the saga of worldwide struggle against slavery. Well, we appreciate that article by Thomas Sowell. And we look forward to other people having some comments, perhaps, about that. I didn't read the whole article, obviously, but you get the point of what Thomas Sowell is trying to say. He's trying to get people to understand and have a different perspective on slavery from the past. At any rate, we've come up to a short break here. We'll be back in a minute. We also see we have a caller coming in on the line. Just hang on tight for us. We'll be back with your call in just a moment. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Be right back.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
Welcome back to Into Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. So glad you joined us this morning. And this morning we have our first caller in line. Mark is calling. Hello, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks.
A couple of things. Wanted to let you know I heard last night that we have another listener down in Dallas, Georgia, who's listening on his computer. So,
wow. Where is Dallas, Georgia, by the way?
To the listeners.
That's excellent. Where is Dallas, Georgia?
About 45 minutes anyway, probably northwest of Atlanta.
Okay, so if down in Atlanta, welcome to the show from Dallas, Georgia, and thank you for listening on the webcast. So glad that someone is availing themselves of that great opportunity.
It occurred to me as you were reading that article by Thomas Sowell, talking about, as you made the comment, that it's good evidence that many of the black people in Africa were enslaving each other, and I think probably one of the best evidences, one of the best evidences of that is that they are still doing that even today.
Now, that's a very interesting point. Now, I'm not really up on this particular fact, but I've heard it several other places before. Tell us a little bit more about that in some detail, that black people in Africa still enslave other blacks and even trade them.
I'm not an expert, obviously, on that, but I've read that different reports, especially in the Congo, that there's a good bit of that going on, and still a pretty heavy concentration in that area of cannibalism still in 2005. So we certainly didn't, the Europeans, white Europeans, certainly did not invent the concept of slavery. Of course, we know it goes back many thousands of years to even to biblical times, but and certainly it wasn't a very difficult job to go over to Africa to get slaves because there was a market ready and waiting.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that comment. That's certainly the case as I understand reading the, you know, just columns and other comments from scholars that slavery not obviously didn't begin just recently or in the last 200 years, even the last 400 years. It goes back millennia.
And I think a good thing to note is that none of those people that decry Southern slavery and speaking mostly of black activists and others today, I don't ever hear any of them making the comment that that did not occur. And you don't hear any of them talking about the issue of black slavery. That's something they kind of leave alone. So that's an indication to me that there's probably something to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. We also find, we found in recent shows, Mark, I don't know if you had heard them, but we discussed some of these people in black studies departments at Duke University, University of Virginia, elsewhere, coming out now and exposing the fact that there were widespread numbers of Negroes free in the southern states before the war between the states, and that those folks owned other black slaves.
Right.
So a lot of this stuff is actually being uncovered over time. People like Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams have been decried because they're black of being, you know, Oreos, you know, black on the outside but white on the inside, and they're really, you know, selling out their race and so forth. Well, this has just always been false. They've always stuck very close to what is correct and factual, theoretically sustainable. And now other scholars, believe it or not, even in some of these black studies and similar departments, are coming out and saying, hey, look, you've been sold a bill of goods if you've been reading revisionist history. They've been leaving out some very pertinent facts. And we appreciate you mentioning this one again to us this morning, Mark.
All right. Well, keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mark. Talk to you later.
Okay, buddy.
Well, very interesting discussion here at the Tyranny Response Network. In fact, someone had sent, I think this was Greg, who frequently sends articles. Appreciate that, Greg. Appreciate, too, if you folks who send articles to the Tyranny Response Network that might be used on the show might also send us the source of the comment. We have here something from Gray Echoes that Greg sends out for Black History Month. Anthony Johnson of Virginia. This is sort of interesting. Again, it relates again to this whole issue of slavery and so forth and the treatment of blacks in the past. Virginia, Guide to the Old Dominion, WPA Writers Program, Oxford University Press, New York, 1940, on page 378. That's very good. That's the source. In 1650, in 1650 there were 300 Negroes in Virginia, about 1% of the population. They weren't slaves any more than the approximately 4,000 white indentured servants working out their loans for passage money to Virginia, and who were granted 50 acres each when freed from their indentures so they could raise their own tobacco. Slavery was established in 1654 when Anthony Johnson, Northampton County, convinced the court that he was entitled to the lifetime services of John Kasor, a Negro. But who was Anthony Johnson, winner of this epoch-making decision? Anthony Johnson was a Negro himself, one of the original 20 brought to Jamestown in 1619 and sold to the colonists. By 1623, he had earned his freedom, and by 1651 was prosperous enough to import 5 servants of his own, for which he received a grant of 250 acres as head rights. Anthony Johnson ought to be in the Book of Firsts as the most ambitious of the first 20. He could have been the first Negro to set foot on Virginia soil. He was Virginia's first Negro, and first to establish a Negro community, first Negro landowner, first Negro slave owner, and as the first white or black to secure slave right, a slave status for a servant. He was actually the founder of slavery in Virginia, a remarkable man. Very interesting. This is actually Oxford University Press putting this book out. I just love learning this sort of thing. The tyranny response, you know, I have to tell you a personal story. Back in the 1980s, 1990s, was very upset, went through periods and fits of anger as he realized that his public education or government school indoctrination program had deceived him into believing certain things about the nefarious Abraham Lincoln and many other aspects, including Benedict Arnold, by the way, many other aspects of American history. He began to realize that indeed he had been deceived, that the revisionists have got the upper hand, and now always is tantalized anytime he can read a historical account of something that's a little bit off color, excuse the pun, and perhaps a little bit different than the mainstream might provide. Well, here's interesting information. The first slaveholder in Virginia, the man to bring slavery to Virginia, was indeed a black man, one of the first free Negroes to set foot in Virginia seeking the bounty of that great country. Not for revisionist history on the Tyranny Response Network. In fact, on Christian Worldview, we're hoping to help you get a better ability to think and a better understanding of history, true history, and abort and get rid of the nonsense that is often shoved down our throats through the mainstream media and the public school or government school indoctrination program. We're coming up against our 8 o'clock break here on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to TRN. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. Remember, the phone number here is 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. You can also welcome to send your questions and comments by email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. Remember, the show is live only from 7:30 to 9 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. If you're listening at any other time, it's a recorded broadcast. Love to hear your comments or questions by email about the broadcast you're listening to. But don't bother to call in unless it's during the live times. So many things in the news here today. I have a backlog of emailed stories and other things that just is tremendous. And all of them have some relationship to the Christian worldview. For instance, just briefly to mention here, it says Fox News is reporting this morning that war costs since 9/11 may exceed $300 billion. With military costs in September 11, 2001, now expected to exceed $300 billion, the Pentagon is spending more per soldier to fight in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere than it did earlier in earlier conflicts. So here we have big government coming in, big wars, even wars that are questionable, probably aren't just, at least not in my mind, from a Christian point of view, to go over and attack these folks and slaughter hundreds of thousands of people for the so-called righteous cause of spreading democracy, whatever that means. I guess it means getting some Shiites in power and electing them and having some folks that are going to support oil policy the way Bush and his friends like it. Who knows? At any rate, this, from a Christian worldview, this is not only a tremendous waste of money, it's also a tremendous waste of life, something that is unjust and not something that can be supported. Just think about it, folks. Think about what those costs have meant now, where things are going with your elected government. Unfortunately, if you're one of the unfortunate people that voted for George Bush, I hope that you'll begin to rethink the wisdom of that decision. Remember, God forgives all sins, and if you come to the conclusion that God will forgive all sins, if you come to the conclusion that it was wrong to do so, we hope that you'll look in the next election to turn to a principled person. In this last election, that would have been Michael Bodnarik or Michael Perutka. Take a look at those parties, folks, that are on the far right and are truly upholding principle. We also have in other news stories some things coming up again about the national ID card. You know, folks are concerned about this, and they should be concerned about it. I lived in a country, Chile, again, where they have a national ID card installed by the military dictatorship. And although life was not totally egregious because of this, that is not a country that has a Bill of Rights like we do. And it is, I think, a severe violation of our rights, a sign of a moving towards the end of our civilization when we give government that kind of control, especially under the guise of wanting to protect us and all the other nonsense. People need to realize that Hitler, Stalin, other people say the same kinds of things. The left has always said that their policies of taking away our rights are temporary measures designed to ensure our rights and help us in the long run. In fact, folks, it's just a bunch of lies. The state uses these tactics frequently in order to get not only under your skin, but into your lives, into your homes, and to regulate you, eventually to kill or to take away property. This is the way, the modus operandi of the state. Well, again, we've got so many different things here to go over. If you have any comments or questions about these things, please do give us a call at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. I'm just so intrigued about these different articles and so forth that we've gotten in and been talking about, and we had a caller, Mark, who had some comments about the issue of revising the history of what's really gone on with slavery. And Thomas Sowell had an article about it this morning in the Times Examiner. And so it seems like an apropos time to bring it up. We have here ethnic cleansing, American style. Forgive, yes, forget, never. Greg sends us again something from Gray Echoes, and he's has a few different quips in here about ethnic cleansing, and especially about ethnic cleansing in the United States before the war between the states or during the war between the states. This is an article called Ethnic Cleansing, American Style, by James Bovard, excerpts from his Freedom Daily essay in October of 1999. But before we go ahead and read this, we have a caller on the line. We'd like to go ahead right to your call. This is Dr. John Coben. Welcome to the show.
Hello, John. This is Leslie.
Hello.
I wanted to comment about slavery.
Okay.
When I was in Ghana, and mission work in Ghana, it's on the west coast of Africa, one of the largest slave trading countries. The British had a fort there, and then in the 1600s, the Dutch took over the fort after the British decided not to do slave trading anymore.
Now, just a quick minute, Leslie, just a quick minute. Now, remember, we're listening to people that have been largely educated in public schools or government schools. They probably don't know where Ghana is. Now, I'll give folks a hint. It's in Africa, but please describe for us where Ghana is.
Well, as I said, it's on the west coast of Africa, where the big hump of Africa sort of curves in a little bit. It's in that area, next to Ivory Coast. Anyway.
Okay, thank you.
What is interesting about that huge, this slave fort, the huge Dutch fort, where the slaves were held as they were put on the ship, fascinating museum. In fact, it shows where these slaves went from Ghana, Charleston, South Carolina being one of the places, the West Indies. But in this museum, it is known fact and documented on the walls, etc., that the African slaves were sold by other Africans, that the tribal heads would go into the interior, make raids, steal people, capture people, and sell them to the British and then the Dutch. It's not new information. The fact that African countries document it and know it to be true.
That's very interesting. Can you tell us the museum indicate how the slaves were captured and why they were captured? Was it rivalrous tribes? Was it warfare?
All of that. Africa is not a country of nations, even though they're in nations at this time. That's why you still have all this ethnic cleansing going on. It's a country of tribes. And so despite having them put into nations, say Kenya, Rwanda, or whatever, the country is more into tribal things. Their tribe is more important than their nation. So you would have in Rwanda, you'd have the two groups trying to kill each other. Well, the same thing went on. The tribes would raid other tribes, and the plunder would be people and cattle and, whatever, and they would sell the people into slavery.
Hmm. So they would capture, a lot of times just fight amongst themselves, and as they capture the booty, some of those would be human beings, and they would just sell them off, or they would enslave them. Then they had probably a surplus more than they needed, so as any other economic good. They preferred to have the things that the British or the Dutch or the Danes or whoever was coming around the bend might bring them, and they'd trade them for them, load them on ships, and those folks would go sell them elsewhere in the world. They were always property as far as the white men were considered. Doesn't make it less evil, but what you're saying is they were actually buying a commodity. They weren't actually running into the land themselves and rounding up blacks and kidnapping them. They were just receiving the stolen or the kidnapped goods.
Well, that's correct. In fact, in the museum itself, and it did not even document that the whites did not go in at all to get these people because they would be killed.
Mm-hmm.
The tribes did not want the white people in that area. They were not interested in the whites coming into the interior, into the tribal areas. They just pretty much were on the coast in this huge fort and just received the slaves that were captured by the other tribes.
Very fascinating. We're all being educated this morning on the Tyranny Response Network. We really appreciate the call this morning, Leslie. If you have any other comments, please don't hesitate to call back and let us know about these very interesting facts. Appreciate the call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. We've just come up against a break here on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to the now famous Christian Worldview show with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
And we welcome you back to the show this morning on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We were reading a message that Greg sent in, forwarded an article to us from Gray Echoes. Actually, it's the Ethnic Cleansing American Style by James Bovard article. This actually appeared in Freedom Daily in October 1999, but is apropos to this very interesting issue about what happened during the American War between the states, as well as the plight of the Negro and so forth. Very interesting discussion. He says, the statements of Union officers and their official reports revealed attitudes far different from how the war between the states is presented in American school textbooks. Yes, he's debunking revisionist history again. We love that. The longer the American War, Civil War lasted, the more Union generals acted as if they were conducting a crusade to crush infidels. In September 17, 1863, a letter to Henry W. Halleck, the General-in-Chief of the Union Armies, Union General William Tecumseh Sherman, wrote, "The United States has the right and the power to penetrate to every part of the national domain. We will remove and destroy every obstacle if need be, take every life, every acre of land, every particle of property, everything that to us seems proper." Ooh. The great lunatic Sherman has spoken, and who was a Southerner, by the way. I'm interjecting here, and this isn't from Bovard. Sherman was the first president of Louisiana State University, a little-known fact, a traitor, at least in my opinion, to the cause of the South. "I have your telegram saying," he continues, it's just a Sherman speaking, "saying the president has read my letter and thought it should be published. I profess to fight for but one single purpose, namely to sustain a government capable of vindicating its just and rightful authority, independent of blacks," and he uses a different word, and I just substituted a politically correct word, not to offend the other listeners here. Just so you know, he's using a different word. "Rightful authority, independent of blacks, cotton, money, or any earthly interest." That's what he wanted. On June 21st, 1864, before his bloody march to the sea, Sherman wrote to the Secretary of War, "There is a class of people in the South, men, women, and children, who must be killed or banished before you can hope for peace and order." A few months later, Sherman informed one of his subordinate commanders, "I am satisfied that the problem of this war consists in the awful fact that the present class of men who rule the South must be killed outright rather than in the conquest of territory, so that hard bulldog fighting and a great deal of it yet remains to be done. Therefore, I shall expect you on any and all occasions to make bloody results." On September 27, 1864, Sherman wrote to General John Hood, the Confederate commander of the Army of Tennessee, and announced, "I have deemed it in the interest of the United States that the citizens now residing in Atlanta should remove, those who prefer to go prefer it to go south, and the rest north." On October 9, 1864, Sherman wrote to General Ulysses S. Grant, "Until we can repopulate Georgia, it is useless to occupy it, but the utter destruction of its roads, houses, and people will cripple their military resources. I can make the march and make Georgia howl." Sherman lived up to his boasts and left a swath of devastation and misery that helped plunge the South into decades of poverty. Scorched earth tactics were also used in the Shenandoah Valley, 1864 and 1865. On September 28, 1864, General Phil Sheridan ordered one of his commanders to leave the valley a barren waste. General Grant ordered Union troops to make all the valleys south of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad a desert as high up as possible. Eat out Virginia clear and clean so that the crows flying over it for the balance of the season will have to carry their provender with them. Union General Wesley Merritt proudly reported to Sheridan on December 3, 1864, that the destruction of the valley and of the mountains abounding it was almost complete, or was most complete. Such tactics were typical towards the end of the war. On December 19, 1864, a Union colonel reported that he had followed orders to desolate the country from Arkansas River to Fort Scott and burn every house on the route. In the same month, the Major General with the Army of the Potomac noted the success of the Union expedition south of Petersburg, Virginia. Many houses were deserted, contained only helpless women and children. Almost every house was set on fire. How nice. Many Union officers were horrified at the wanton destruction their armies inflicted on the South. On March 8, 1865, General Cyrus Bussey reported, "There are several thousand families within the limits of this command who are related to and dependent on the Arkansas soldiers in our service. These people have nearly all been robbed of everything they had by the troops of this command and are now left destitute and compelled to leave their homes to avoid starvation. In most instances, everything has been taken and no receipts given. The people turned out to starve, and their effects loaded into trains and sent to Kansas." The source of the preceding quotes is the War of Rebellion, a compilation of the official records of the Union and Confederate armies, 128 volumes published by the Government Printing Office. Thomas Bland Keyes compiled one of the most shocking comments in his excellent 1991 book, Uncivil War, Union Army and Navy Excesses in the Official Records, published by the Belvoir Press in Biloxi, Mississippi. For a masterful examination of the broad issues surrounding the war, check out Jeffrey Roger Hummel's Emancipating Slaves, Enslaving Freemen in Chicago, published by Open Court in 1996. Some Northern leaders claimed to be deeply concerned about the well-being of slaves liberated by the Northern armies. However, Union tactics intentionally devastated the economies of much of the South, leaving people to struggle for years to avert starvation. This destruction made the South's recovery far slower than it otherwise would have been, and greatly increased the misery of both black and white survivors. The more ruthless the Northern armies acted, the more exalted federal power became. For many, the greatness and sanctity of the federal government was confirmed by the fact that the government possessed the power to burn southern cities, destroy southern crops, and starve southern families. The more the politicians used government to the power to destroy, the more government power itself was exalted as the greatest curative. Lord Acton, writing in England in 1862, observed, "The American Civil War, whether the northern government succeeds or fail, its character is altered, and its power permanently and enormously increased." An 1875 article in the American Law Review noted, "The late war left the average American politician with a powerful desire to acquire property from other people without paying for it. The tragic mistakes, blunders, and crimes of politicians led to a war that resulted in a vast expansion of the power of the political class." Folks, that is an article worth reading and rereading again. James Vovard is one of those tremendous libertarians out there who debunks the revisionist histories and the so-called great policies of the conservative right, including the drug war, the tariff issue that continued to goes on for protectionism. Great scholar, and just I really appreciate the things that he's had to say here, and I hope you have as well. Well, I've read that long article, and it's been all the way through to another break time again. We're going to be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
TRN.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to the show. We have yet another Gray Echoes forward to us from Greg about an officer who ate a banana. MLK marcher gets offended. He says, I bet this doesn't make the nightly news. It was reported by libertarian talk show host in Atlanta, Neil Bortz, on February 14th. Thought it'd be interesting to make a comment about this here. Remember, if you have a comment about the quotes from the article of James Bovard earlier, or about this one I'm about to read, please don't hesitate to call the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Questions and comments also can be sent by email to questions@policyofliberty.net, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Three words, lady, get a life, from Chuck Muth's News and Views. Okay, here's the deal. It's January 15th, the MLK holiday. They're having a civil rights march in Columbus. A woman writes a letter complaining about the conduct of a Columbus police officer during the march. Did the officer insult anyone? Did he yell racial epithets? Did he abuse or shove somebody? Nope, none of the above. So what did the officer do? Well, he ate a banana. That's it. The police department sent around a snack van to give the officers who were working on the march something to eat. This particular officer chose a banana. So the complaining woman sees the officer eating a banana, and she is deeply offended. Okay, you're on the edge of your seats now, aren't you? You know there's more to the story, and you want me to fill it in, right? Sorry, that's pretty much the story, except that is, for the woman's reasoning. Here you go. Since it was a civil rights march, and since most of the participants were black, the women felt that the officer eating a banana was actually trying to humiliate the black marchers by somehow relating black people to apes, since apes are reported to enjoy bananas. I'm not joking, folks. Believe it or not, this woman has such a huge racial chip on her shoulder that she actually thinks that if a white person eats a banana in the presence of a black person, the white bigot is somehow sending a message that he considers black folks to be apes. Now, wouldn't this woman just be a delight as a next-door neighbor? Especially if you could somehow pot a banana tree and just stick it in a greenhouse so she could view it every day. And wouldn't you absolutely love to have her work closely with her? Every day you would have to pack your lunch oh so carefully. No bananas, and I'd be really careful about having any watermelon in that fruit cup. very humorous article. Well, at any rate, folks, we are debunking revisionist history today here at the Tyranny Response Unit. We are happy to do so because, folks, we've been misled. Ever since the great founding of our country, there have been forces who have, and I'll call them forces of evil, who have tried to undermine our rights, tried to sell out our liberties, and tried to bring us into a condition of servitude with a large federal government that controls our lives more and more. And that essentially occurred when Abraham Lincoln was elected as the third candidate on the ticket with 36% of the vote, brought us into a tremendous war, undeclared war, with all the other abuses that he brought with it, and then has continually sold us out through the abuses of various other presidents that succeeded him, namely Ulysses S. Grant, and Woodrow Wilson, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Lyndon Baines Johnson, down to the present day. We are suffering a great deal of injustices that the founding fathers would literally turn in their grave if they could see what was going on. Obviously they can't, but you get the point. At any rate, here, folks, we have a degraded America. And why do we want to say this? Why do we want to expose this, especially on a show like Christian Worldview? What does it have to do with the Christian worldview? Folks, history has everything to do with the Christian worldview. If you as a Christian are ignorant of the history of liberty, of the history of our country, ignorant of the philosophy of history and the way things are moving in our current day, you will not know how to react appropriately to public policy when you see it. You will not know what to stand for. You will not know what to fight for or to disobey when the state shoves it your way. You will not care enough to see what's going on right under your nose because you won't know enough. And we are dedicated, this show, Christian Worldview, to helping you as a Christian understand history better, be able to adapt the what's gone on in history, to correct your warped understanding, my warped understanding, everybody's understanding who's been challenged by the modern mainstream media, that's been challenged by the government school indoctrination program. Folks, I hope you have a better understanding of why I'm so opposed to government schools and some of the indoctrination that goes on there, that why my kids have only been homeschooled, and why I hope one day they'll look back and say, Dad, I'm so thankful that you didn't cave in and send me to one of those indoctrination centers, and why we still, for the last 20 some years, have not had a television in the home. Not that I'm opposed to ever letting the kids or myself cast their eyes on a television show, especially if it happens to be a World Series game or the Trojans or some other Pac-10 team is showing that they're still dominant. Yes, I am a member from the True South, Southern California, and therefore am a Pac-10 fan. But at any rate, there are certain things that we can watch, and it's not unwholesome or ungodly or wicked or anything like that, and I don't condemn people even who choose to have televisions in their homes. But let me tell you, folks, I don't like to be preached to by these people that are ignorant baboons or arms of the liberal left. I don't want anything to do with their ideas and thinking about them, having them shoved down my throat. I'll read about them on my own, I'll evaluate them, and I will, in a scholarly, academic fashion, dismantle them with the truth. But I don't need myself or the wife or children just sitting there soaking in the nonsense that they want to shove down my throat. So, again, now perhaps you can understand a little bit about why I've chosen those things for myself. We have a couple of other articles that have come in that are very interesting. A number of them have to do with the medical profession, and we want to go ahead and discuss some of these things. The U.S. creates Drug Safety Oversight Board. The Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Leavitt addresses the Food and Drug Administration employees in Rockville, Maryland, Tuesday, whatever, I guess just coming up. This came in from Stephen J. Botano's article, February 15th. Washington, the government is setting up a special monitoring board to keep checking on medicines once they're on the market, responding to complaints that officials reacted too slowly to reports linking prescription painkillers and heart attack stroke. It's a $5 billion a year business, he goes on, and he basically says, the Drug Safety Board was announced by Health and Human Services Secretary, who has become, it's become clear that people want more oversight and openness from the FDA. No, it's not. Leave it alone. We don't want more oversight. You guys blew it to begin with. You're bunglers. The government does not ensure quality and safety better than anyone else in the market. The market may not be perfect, but we found that government completely fails. Why would we want a failed institution like you to solve your own failure? You're just going to bring more failure. We don't want it. Not every one of us, anyway, even though you find some others who may indeed think that this is the solution. Well, the public school system has failed. We need to give it more money. Well, the Food and Drug Administration has not done its job. We need to give it more power, more money, more employees. Nonsense. Government, state programs like this do not work well, and we've just seen their failure. Let's not let them get bigger just so they can ostensibly get better. It just ain't going to happen. We've got another medical story coming up as soon as we get back from the break. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a great welcome back for the last half hour of Christian Worldview this Wednesday morning, February the 16th. So glad you've been able to join us. And we're very happy and delighted that there are a number of you listening in on the webcast this morning in various parts of the United States and outside of the Greenville, South Carolina range. Thanks so much for joining us on the webcast. Be sure to go to policyofliberty.net. Tell your friends about the link there that you just go down and click live, and it pops up your media player or whatever it used to play sound files, and you can listen anywhere in the world, or your friends can listen that you would direct them to, anywhere in the world, anywhere in America, of course, who would like to listen to the Tyranny Response Network and Christian Worldview via the web. Plenty of space still available for those of you who want to get into one of those slots to listen. I just want to encourage you to go ahead and fill them up. We've got plenty of opportunity for you to expand your knowledge base this morning. Get rid of this revisionist history, which is plaguing so many folks. Well, back to some of these medical stories. Well, before I do, the phone number, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955 to reach the show this morning. Appreciate the calls and questions that you might have. As well, you can send 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to the Tyranny Response Network and to Christian Worldview by writing to questions at policyofliberty.net. Remember, the show is only live from 7:30 to 9 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. Other times you're listening to recorded broadcast every broadcast. Glad that you are. If you have comments and questions, you'll need to use the email method. Again, those links are all found on the homepage of policyofliberty.net. Remember to support the show. At this point, we're completely listener-supported. We'd like to keep it that way, but it requires a lot of folks who are willing to donate time, effort, and money to the cause, and we'd appreciate you going to the links on policyofliberty.net, clicking one of those links and finding out how you can help. Well, we have some other medical news that's come up today. Just a couple of asides, just sort of medical news. The teen in the Zoloft defense trial gets 30 years. Charleston, South Carolina, 15-year-old boy who claimed the antidepressant Zoloft drove him to kill his grandparents and burn their house down, was found guilty of murder Tuesday and sentenced to 30 years in prison. And the court basically said Zoloft was not to blame. A psychiatrist testified for the defense that the Zoloft was to blame for the killings, and a former Food and Drug Administration official told the jury that the crime was an angry, rash, manic act that was chemically induced. So anyway, Zoloft is off the hook. The drug companies are off the hook. This boy, a very tragic boy at age 12 who'd killed his grandparents, will now be going to jail until he's 45 years old, except that he'll probably get out early for good behavior or something else, given the way our prison system is, unfortunately. Similarly, we had other things, since we're speaking of killings. Girl accused last week, remember, killing her sister over the burger. Do you remember that story? A 12-year-old girl was charged last week for the murder under juvenile law for allegedly killing her 9-year-old sister, apparently in a dispute over a hamburger. What a sad tragedy. This is where America's gone, folks. And I hope these aren't homeschool kids that are behaving this way, but I don't think they are. I think you're looking largely at the degenerates that have been produced by the media type civilization that we have, the want-it-now, selfish civilization that we have, and the anything-goes, alternative lifestyles are okay, and who knows what else, by the government school indoctrination program. Well, getting back again to the more serious medical stories, the South Carolina Supreme Court shoots down the wrongful life claim. This is interesting. Page 30 from the February 14th edition of American Medical News. Patients can successfully hold their physicians responsible for many things when it comes to medical liability, but there's one area where the courts have been extremely reluctant to let patients go, a claim for wrongful life. A recent South Carolina Supreme Court decision followed the lead of other state Supreme Courts in not letting a child go forward with a wrongful life lawsuit. In other words, what's a wrongful life? Well, if the doctor finds out that, well, maybe there's a potential problem with this child in your womb, we sense that there could be retardation or some other kind of debilitating disease, and they don't tell you about it, for instance, or they're negligent in making it real clear so that the woman can then exercise her choice to murder the baby that's in the womb because it will not have a nice life. The plaintiffs were saying the baby, after he's born, has a right to sue the doctors, and of course the parents will direct it for the retarded child caring for the retarded child, has the right to sue the doctor for allowing him to live. You should have killed me. You should have told my mom so that she could have taken the knife to me or the suction or the saline or whatever it is and wiped me out. I don't want to live. I shouldn't have to live in this condition. It's your fault that I brought into the world, and I could have been so legally aborted earlier. You need to be paying for this crime, this tragedy. Not crime, tragedy. And so that's how the logic goes, at any rate. Again, the left, the liberal, is just so twisted, folks. There is no reason for any of us to believe that any human being would ever think such a thing. We all, except for the insane, the ones that actually commit suicide and therefore are out of the picture, the people who are depressed and go over the edge after a long life of difficulty for whatever reason, we do not see that human beings rationally make the choice, and we cannot presume that their default response is going to be, I wish I were dead. And we cannot presume that retarded children really want to die. So there's no reason that this thing should ever have been upheld. And we're glad that so far, at least in America, the Supreme Court of South Carolina has agreed with other state courts to shoot this down. Now, guess what? It'll probably go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and then we'll wait and see just how good those potential Bush appointees may not be there for a while, but maybe those potential Bush appointees that might come on there, we'll see how they really do with all this. Will they really stand up for life? Be interesting life ahead for those of us. Interesting from a Christian worldview, simply because as Christians we honor and respect the right to life. There are many reasons that we should be opposed to abortion, not just philosophical or religious, but also economic, and I've written about this and others have done so as well. We need to oppose abortion and we need to support the right to life, and certainly a mother, just because the child is conceived with a defect or is underdeveloped, does not have a right to kill, and certainly the one who's born does not have, cannot sue the doctor, should not be able to sue the doctor, and right now can't, for having been a wrongful life. We've come up against another break here on the Tyranny Response Network. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Here's a little more roughage, especially for those of us who support the Second Amendment. I got a note here forwarded to me from the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership Incorporated in Hartford, Wisconsin. Apparently there's a book out called Outgunned by Robert A. Waters and John T. Waters, Cumberland House Press, 2004, available at Amazon. Again, it's Outgunned by Robert and John Waters. Apparently it's a book about the criminal mind and how they actually they get their arms and what they plan to do. It says the chapters in Outgunned are not a quickie armed citizen blurbs, but are full stories about the criminals involved, the plans they've made, the crimes they've committed, and the ends they met. Because the author simply supplied these extra details, Outgunned actually provides an inside look at the way these kinds of criminals think and operate. The way the stories are told, you feel like you're the thing, you're the one. The way the stories are told, you feel like you're there watching the key events. Anyway, it sounds like an interesting book. If any of you have read the book, we'd appreciate you calling the show, 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, or you can send us an email to questions@policyofliberty.net. Like to discuss that more. We're always interested in gun rights, gun nuts, anything to do with guns here on the Christian Worldview show. Anyway, we have other stories. We won't read them all here about state Medicaid program trying to cut back the drugs or put a special list on of what Medicaid or doctors prescribing for Medicaid patients can prescribe. People are complaining about that rule, saying no, they want to be able to get the most expensive drugs. Listen, folks. The Tyranny Response Unit is against tyranny. One of the greatest tyrannies we have, and what no Christian should support, is welfare. And Medicaid, Medicare, these things are welfare. Well, at least Medicaid. Medicare is somewhat debatable. Medicaid is a welfare program. It's a robbery. It's extortion. It's robbing from one, giving to another person. And so really don't care much to hear about your complaints about the drugs you'd like to have with the stolen money you're using to get them. Oh, but I'm poor. I can't afford it. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. Poverty is not, you're not guaranteed anywhere in the Bible or in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence that you won't be poor. And there are the means for caring for poor people is a voluntary volunteerism and generosity of charity, whether it's private charity or from the church. And that's where charity should evolve from. I'm not here to tell you that I'm hard-hearted and don't want you to be cared for if you're poor. But when you look to the government and rob people in order to support your lifestyle, and then you demand even better things and more robbery to be done, I'm just not very sympathetic. Sorry. Anyway, lots of medical news that came down the pike today. We also have some environmental news here. I noticed that it looks like we have another email article sent in from Greg. Marsupial manure helps Aussies, that's Australians, for those of you who went to the public school, how helps Aussies make paper. February 15th says, Canberra, Australia, an environmentally friendly paper manufacturer has stumbled upon an unlikely way to put an unwanted natural resource to good use. The company has created its first batch of paper for marsupial manure. Landowners around the Tasmanian state town of Burnie helped scrape together 55 pounds of kangaroo and wallaby dung for the local business. Creative Paper Tasmania to create the unique paper pulp. Manager Joanne Gare said Tuesday, it's a great product for tourists, but also something that gets our eco-friendly message home to a lot of people, said Gare, whose wallpaper product contained no wood. Good for them. I'm glad to see it, actually. I'm going to read on here. The sand-colored sheets will be embossed with the words, genuine kangaroo poo, she said. Roughly 400 sheets can be made from 55 pounds of the fibrous droppings. Folks, as long as it's done in the free market, as long as people can make a profit by processing genuine kangaroo poo, the Tyranny Response Unit has no problem with it. In fact, it's a great thing. Anybody who can make money, make a buck on something innovative, like taking a normal bad thing, like this this particular element, the kangaroo and wallaby dung, and turning into something profitable. In other words, their inputs cost basically zero, except for the transportation costs, transactions costs. Turn into something they can sell. Hope they do real well. Sorry that they're aligning themselves with the environmental movement, who also is in the news today as Fox News reports the Kyoto Accord goes into effect. February 16th, that's today, Kyoto, Japan. Wednesday, 7 years after it was negotiated, imposing limits on emissions of carbon dioxide and other gases scientists blame for rising world temperatures. Some scientists, because it's not the Fox News, right, gives the impression that all scientists believe this. This is very debatable territory here, folks. Some scientists blame for rising world temperatures, melting glaciers, and rising oceans. The agreement negotiated in Japan's ancient capital of Kyoto in 1997 and ratified by 140 nations officially took effect midnight New York time. It targets carbon dioxide and other gases that trap heat in the atmosphere and are believed to be behind global temperatures that many scientists say are already disrupting the Earth's environmental and weather patterns. Folks, it just ain't going to happen. I'm telling you, if we have a Christian worldview and we believe that God is sovereign and controls history, history will not end. It will not even be changed until God decides it to be changed. If God wants the sun to stand still, the Earth to stop rotating, He can do that. It's His choice. But man is not able to disrupt the plan of God. Sorry. It just ain't going to happen. That's part of the Christian worldview. And this whole idea that man somehow can emit certain gases or certain things through his activities that will harm the environment so dramatically that it can't recover is simply false. Remember all the dramatic conversations about the Exxon Valdez and the oil spill in Alaska and how it would, you know, for decades and decades there would be destruction there? Folks, it not only helps clean itself up after a while, but the efforts of Exxon and others in going up there and doing some of their own cleanup have been excellent. And we don't have even near the catastrophic predictions coming true from that oil spill. And although it's bad, it certainly killed wildlife and did bad things, it did not affect our economy in such a way or affect our environment or our world in such a way that's irrecoverable. That's the word I was looking for. Likewise, greenhouse gas emissions that are caused by humans are minuscule compared to the green so-called gas emissions that come just from the ocean or a single volcanic eruption. Other scientists have shown that human emissions of these gases are very small. Even if there were some correlation, it would be just minuscule by relationship to other things that occur in the natural world. So we don't expect that that any of these predictions, these dire predictions, will come true. It's just a ploy that people are using on the left to try to subvert business, to put a perspective on humanity and against God on people of the world that is just simply wrong. Encourage you to read, do some reading, go to the Cato Institute, look on the website at some of the, it's cato.org, by the way, www.cato.org, and also pick up Ronald Bailey's book about the global warming myth if you want any more info on this stuff. Or even a quick fix is to go to policyofliberty.net, click on the articles page, and look through my inventory of articles on the environment last year from about June to August. You'll see them on the list there, debunking all the various aspects of the environmental wacko doctrine. We've come up against another break time on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a second with Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
We're back at the final segment now of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. So glad that you joined us. So many interesting topics today, from debunking revisionist history and talking down to various medical issues of the day and philosophical medical ethics and so forth about the unborn. Glad you joined us. Phone number 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955. Going to be talking again, because it's coming up in the news, a lot about the government school. The book by Bruce Short, who was a Southern Baptist, trying to get the Southern Baptist to condemn or make a proclamation that people shouldn't be involved with the public school, especially church members. He wrote this book, bashing the public school. We just ordered that, and it arrived, and I will be taking a look at that eagerly, as I always enjoy reading things about the government school program. And we have some articles that are coming in from the places like the WorldNet Daily, talking about the Exodus mandate. That's people coming to South Carolina wanting to avoid the liberal politics, the liberal ideology that's so widespread in the nation. And essentially, they're supporting Short's book, and we appreciate that. You can check out that on WorldNet Daily if you're interested in following up. Appreciate the Exodus mandate's conviction that that the public school is not part of the Christian worldview. In fact, that it's even a sin to send one's children or participate in the public school system. We also have another story, interestingly enough, that lawmaker calls pro-homosexual play typical public school propaganda, by Jim Brown, February 14th, Agape Press. A Virginia legislator is expressing outrage over a public high school play in which two male students engaged in a homosexual kiss on stage. Give me a break. I'm just so glad my kids don't have to suffer through this kind of nonsense. The play performed at, and I hope you are as well, by the way, the play performed at Stonebridge High School in Ashburn was called Postcards from Paradise and featured a high school football star who supposedly discovers he is a homosexual. In his final lines, the male actor asked the audience, "Am I a little too much like you for your own comfort? Do you hate me because you see a little of me hiding in you?" Oh, brother, that's just disgusting. Some articles are hard to read, folks, but this kind of stuff just really galls me. This is what goes on in public schools, folks. Oh, it'll never happen here. This is the South here, folks. This is Virginia. We're not talking about, you know, New York City or San Francisco. We're talking about hitting close to home. The public school system, the Government School Indoctrination Center, promotes alternative lifestyles. That likes the alternative lifestyle understanding that homosexuality brings. It promotes it. It's an ungodly, anti-Christian, wicked idea that is promoted in government schools. Your kids should not be there. It shouldn't be exposed to this. They are not there to be little lights in the world to somehow stand up in the middle of the play and say, "No, God's word says that this is wrong." They aren't going to have the credibility to do that. They're not going to have the courage to do that, or probably the understanding at a very young age to be able to stand up and do such things. You need to pull them out of the pit of tar and get them away from this sort of stuff. It happens, folks. This is what goes on in public schools. Another big issue that's coming up is this putting parents in charge. Putting parents in charge it was said to be not a good policy by Reed Johnson in Myrtle Beach Online, writing for Charleston Business Magazine. The General Assembly should put a sound educational policy ahead of partisan politics and reject Governor Mark Sanford's putting parents in charge legislation. It will hurt, not help, South Carolina pupils and our hardworking public schools. And he says the problem we have with public schools is we don't have enough money, and this would take away the money. He's worried that if this goes through, money will be lost. Well, paradoxically, perhaps, I concur that we don't want parents in charge. This is a bad doctrine here in South Carolina, not because I don't want the voucher or the money coming back to me. I'd certainly like to have any way to have the extorted money sent back to me so I don't have to support the public school and can use it for homeschool activities. But, folks, and I certainly don't care whether or not the public school goes down the drain like this man does who writes in this article, but I am concerned that if the government, and I'm going to be writing about this in my column, just be looking for it in a couple of weeks after the series on the lottery is done, I'm going to be writing and speaking also February 25th, Americans for Constitutional Government, Greenville, South Carolina, 10:30. I'm one of the panelists opposed to putting parents in charge, and you might come and find out why at Sims Library, 10 o'clock on the 28th of February. The reason is, folks, is we find a great deal of a problem. I have a great deal of difficulty with letting the government into the camel, into the tent. The camel's nose just comes in, then the camel's head comes in the tent, and before you know it, you have the government regulating homeschooling. They haven't been able to defeat us in the courts, folks, and I think they're going to try any way they can to get rid of homeschooling, even if it just means allowing it to exist, but regulating it to death, telling us when we can teach, how we should teach, what we must teach, and so forth. Don't want anything to do with it. It's not worth saving the money to me. It's not worth, I'd rather be extorted and required to pay a bribe to the state of $1,000 per year just for the freedom of educating my children. That's what I look at the property tax is. It's a bribe. It's a stolen, or it's just purely stolen from me in order to support the evil institution. I'm not interested in trying to get a voucher or tax credit. Some of you might be happy to hear your point of view, by the way. It's a good debate for people on the right side. 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955 is the phone number, or send your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, we've come up towards the end of the show here. Haven't got through even all the articles that were sent to me today. A lot of stuff has been going on. Been happy to help you this morning. I hope. Think deeper and think better as a Christian or as just someone who loves liberty. We know there are many out there who listen to the show who are not Christians. Appreciate you listening too and thinking deeply with us. This is a radio program that allows for deep thinking, for true education, for the true expansion of your ability to compute and understand the world around you. We've reached the end of today's broadcast. We'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow on the Tyranny Response Network on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.